I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Kansas City has been carrying out rental inspections for a year now to make sure properties are safe and livable. The Healthy Homes Initiative recently expanded, so it now includes even more properties. It's having an impact, like at the Inglewood Apartments in the Northland, where 10 families were forced to move because of horrific conditions. Today we'll learn how the inspection program is working so far. Then, it's not Friday, but the film critics are here anyway. They've got hot takes on the latest indie and foreign language films now showing in Kansas City. We'll also discuss a new announcement concerning the future of the Tivoli Cinema. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Kansas City passed the Healthy Homes Initiative just over a year ago that opened the door to inspections of poor conditions in rental housing. City Councilman Dan Fowler has seen firsthand what the new law can do. Just a few weeks ago, Fowler toured a troubled Northland apartment building and could hardly believe what he saw. Disgusting, he told the Star. Cockroaches rained down from the door sill. Landlords fought the idea of an inspection law, but now they must keep their units up to snuff or face sanctions. Now a conversation about what this new law does and how it's changing the rental scene in Kansas City. With us, Dan Fowler represents the Northland 2nd District on the Kansas City Council. Councilman, nice to have you back again.
Good
Welcome.
To see you, Steve. Thank you.
Nasser Johani works with the Rental Inspection Program in the Kansas City Health Department. Nasser, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Well, Councilman, tell us about the Inglewood Apartments that you visited. This is a complex near Interstate 29 and Waccamas Drive. What did you find there?
Conditions are absolutely disgusting, deplorable. I couldn't see how human beings could even live in what we saw. Certainly, it was not anything that one would expect in Kansas City or in the United States as far as that goes.
How was it that you saw cockroaches raining down from the door sill? What did you see?
We went into an apartment. I think it was number 12 of one of the buildings. And it was a vacant apartment, but the rest of the building was occupied. Management let us in, and the second the door opened, cockroaches started falling from the ceiling. We immediately got bowled over by an odor. It was just overwhelming. We went in. We saw that sewage has overflowed into the residence. There was human feces sitting in the middle of the floor. There was evidence of human urination around the doors. The place was absolutely deplorable. You could tell that kids had lived there at one point. This was in August. We understand that the place had been occupied as recently as briefly in May. But other than that, management had just shut the door and walked away from the place, although it was apparently somebody was getting in there and using it as a bathroom. The cockroaches were so bad that they infected the entire rest of the building. Frankly, I'm surprised we didn't have a cholera outbreak or worse in that building.
Uninhabitable.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, Nasser, the Healthy Homes Initiative has changed the landscape here, but even the passage of this new law didn't allow the city to do anything about places like the Inglewood Apartments we're talking about. Why was that?
Actually, it's the availability of an ordinance in place. We needed the authority to go and inspect and work with the landlord and the property management on a corrective action plan. Previously, before August of last year, 2018, we had no authority whatsoever.
Because it was an apartment complex subsidized by the federal government. Do I have that right?
Yes, actually, the requirement, when we first got the ordinance passed by the vote of the people, we had an exemption for HUD properties and housing authority. Last month, we actually managed through council, Councilman Dan Fowler, he actually sponsored it, and we managed to remove the exemption on HUD properties.
So places like Inglewood Apartments, you guys can go inspect those now.
Correct.
So what's been the sum total impact of the Healthy Homes Initiative, Nassar, and plus the new law from the city council that permits actions against complexes subsidized by the federal government? How have things changed?
Actually, we've seen landlords responding to our complaints. We go out, we go on site, staff are on site trying to correct violations. We're seeing corrective action plans submitted by landlords. They're fixing most of the violations that we see, as we call it, that may pose an imminent health hazard to the public and to the residents in these units.
Councilman, what's your sense? How big of a problem do we have in Kansas City with substandard rental housing units? I mean, we're describing one horrific place here with the Inglewood Apartments. Are there a lot of Inglewood apartment complexes around the city?
I really don't know. I would hope not. I would hope that this is an outlier, that what we're seeing there is not replicated in other parts of the town. However, in discussion with Health Department staff, my understanding is that there's at least one other complex in the south part of Kansas City that is as bad as Inglewood. But I have not been there myself. It's not in my district. I have talked to my council colleagues about looking at other places that we suspect may have similar problems just by reputation or ownership, and talk to them about going into those places and trying to make a determination as to whether it is an issue there. Hopefully we don't find anything like we found at Inglewood.
Nassar, is your staff, are you guys looking at this South Kansas City complex that Councilman Fowler just mentioned?
We are, actually. We are. We were on site last Friday, and we completed a routine inspection at one unit. One thing, Steve, that you have to consider, that we are a complaint-driven operation. Without receiving that complaint on the apartment complex or on that unit, it is kind of, we're restricted on going and doing a random inspection at these properties.
I was going to say, what are the parameters under which you're operating here, Nassar? You're saying you have to have a complaint in hand before you go out. Why can't you be proactive?
For many reasons. I mean, we're looking at staffing, funding for the program, and we don't want to invade someone's privacy if there is no concern on that unit from the tenant nor the landlord. I don't think there is a need for us to be on site inspecting.
Councilman Fowler, do you agree with that?
Well, up to a point, yes. Mm-hmm. I think with Inglewood, we had HUD with us, and they have greater inspection rights than we do. And so that allowed us some flexibility that we wouldn't ordinarily have had. But yeah, I think that's a way to approach it from Kansas City, Missouri standpoint, because if there's no reason to go, you just don't want to waste the resources. Mm-hmm. But if there is a serious complaint, certainly that's something we need to look into.
How many complaints do you have before your staff right now, Nassar, just roughly?
So far, we're close to 1,100.
1,100?
1,100 complaints.
How long will it take you to work through 1,100 complaints?
Actually, we responded to almost 60% of those.
Wow.
And we are in the process of, I mean, we have to respond to every single one complaint regardless of the status. So we will respond to every single one of them.
How big is your staff?
So far, we are proved to have 11 staff members, and we're looking into adding probably 2 to 3 more.
So do you have 11 right now, or are you short?
We're short. We're still at 8. We are in the process of hiring.
And what's the challenge of getting those people hired and out in the field?
It's the training, mm-hmm. training, and to go through the process of hiring and to find the right staff to do the work.
Is there a dearth of applicants?
Not really.
Mm-hmm.
Not really. I mean, we're kind of, as I mentioned, it takes some time to get the staff member or to get the candidate interviewed, go through the hiring process, and even the training.
What's the challenge of being a good apartment inspector? What kind of skill set do you need?
You want to make sure that you want to do that work. The work is very draining. It's because of what you see. Because of what you see out in the field, it's very stressful because there's a little pushback from landlords, sometimes from tenants. So, and they have to meet certain number of inspections to meet their quota for the week. So it's very draining, it's very stressful, and you want to make sure that this person is very vested into doing the work.
I didn't ask you. I asked Councilman Fowler, are there lots of other Inglewood apartments, horrific conditions around Kansas City based on what you're seeing so far?
The correct answer is yes, but not that we're aware of. As I mentioned, we are complaint-driven, so if we don't receive that complaint, it is hard for us to go and knock on doors to inspect these apartment complexes. But I assure you that, yeah, there are few out there that we're not aware of, and we're waiting for the complaint.
Councilman, do residents know that this law is in place and that there's a remedy available if they make a phone call here? And do they know where to call?
Well, I believe that that information is out there. One of the challenges I think we have with this, or a lot of other things, is to actually publicize it and make sure that the people who need to know about it actually have access to that type of information. One of the things that I've thought about doing just on my own was going with brochures about the program to areas that we think might be suspect, knocking on doors to say, hey, do you know about this? That might be an effective way to approach it in some context. But I think there are probably other ways to do it as well, through publicity, through working with tenants' organizations, and so on, to publicize it and let people know that this program is out there and it works, it helps.
Well, why isn't it mandatory that when someone rents an apartment in Kansas City, they're handed a piece of paper that says, if there are any issues with this apartment, here's the number you call?
Well, I think that would get us into a position of getting in the middle of landlord-tenant negotiations for an apartment, for one thing. Frankly, I hadn't really thought about it. In some communities, and I'm not advocating this for Kansas City, but in some communities, there is a program where an apartment complex has to have a rental or occupancy permit that requires either an annual inspection or an inspection when the unit turns over. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's probably feasible for Kansas City, given the number of rental units that we have. But for smaller communities, it is an option. In fact, for a couple of small clients of mine that are communities like that, I'm exploring those options for them.
Hmm. If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR, and we're talking about the Healthy Homes Initiative, a new initiative that voters passed a while back that allows the city to go out and actually inspect apartment complexes. They found some rough examples out there and some good ones, too. Our phone number here, if you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Nasser, so in the case of the Inglewood apartments, this horrific example we talked about early on here today, were folks actually moved out of the complex? Where did they go? And have you had other cases where you've had to move people out?
Actually, this is the first case that we had to vacate a property. In the case of this apartment complex, we had to vacate one building. I was told that they have 10 plus or minus families. The families were relocated. The owner landlord agreed to actually provide temporary housing for those families.
You know, before the Healthy Homes Initiative came along, were there any inspections of apartments going on in this city?
Not that I'm aware of.
Councilman, it was a wide open field at that point, right? Nothing
yes,
going on.
It was.
Yeah.
It was.
To what extent do you think landlords were taking advantage of that?
You know, I'd like to think that most landlords in Kansas City are good landlords that pay attention to their properties, but certainly there were abuses, and Inglewood would be a prime example of that. But I'm sure throughout the city there were landlords, and we saw evidence of that when we were considering the ordinance, where apartments were not taken care of and people were suffering because of it.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if residents are even aware this program exists. Do you know where to call if you have the opportunity? Our number, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Councilman, why did it take a citizen's initiative to pass an inspection program like this? Why didn't the council do it on its own?
Well, the citizen initiative was a little different from what the council was advocating or what was being advocated before the council. Certainly, there had been discussions for approximately a year or more about something like this before the council. I frankly had a problem.
The council took a look at this program, at least in committee, and didn't move forward with it.
That's correct. That's mm-hmm. correct. There was a lot of pushback on it. I think there were political pressures. I had issues with the program. It was first presented to us because of the structure of the fee payment. It was structured so that a person wanting or owning one house would pay the same as somebody owning a 500-unit apartment complex. Ah. And I didn't think that was fair. But the citizen initiative petition took care of that, where the fees are based upon a per-unit assessment as opposed to a per-property assessment. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was very, very fair.
Tell us how the program works. Just in general terms, how's this thing rolling out here?
Well, annually, each landlord is required to pay a per-unit fee to register with the city. And it is mandatory that each rental property and each rental unit be registered with the with the city of Kansas City.
What is that fee? Do you know off the top of your head?
I'd have to ask that. I think is it
$20
a unit?
$20 per unit.
Okay, yeah.
Per year.
Per year, yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. not a lot of money. Correct.
Yeah. Well, actually, it adds up pretty quick. You consider the number of rental units in Kansas City.
Okay. How many rental units are there in Kansas City, Nasser?
Based on the U.S. Census, we're talking about close to 92,000.
92,000
rental units.
90,000. Okay. Uh-huh. That's a lot of rental units. Yeah.
And so that provides the basic funding for it. Plus, it gives us a little bit of money to take care of issues arise as far as moving people and so on. And then there is an additional assessment if we find a problem and have to go back and reinspect. And I believe that's $150 for the first unit to be reinspected and $100 for subsequent units.
Then, Nasser, if there are problems that need to be fixed, how does that work? Do you actually penalize landlords or just expect them to fix the problems, or how does that work?
Well, that depends on the type of violation. If it's a life-threatening violation, it has to be fixed immediately or we will vacate that unit.
Mm-hmm.
The health hazard violation, which is a violation that may cause an illness or injury, we usually ask the landlord to submit a corrective action plan before the next re-inspection. If corrective action plan is not submitted or violation is not fixed, we will go back for a re-inspection and we charge $150 per re-inspection for that visit.
How quickly do you go back and re-inspect?
Usually we go back within 5 to 10 days, and that depends on the type of violation. If the landlord was sincere and they submitted a corrective action plan and it's going to take them longer time to fix the observation or the citation, we'll give him that enough time to fix the observation or the citation.
Let's go to some phone calls here at 816-235-2888. Let's go to Trevor from South Kansas City. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having this segment. Just a quick comment. I was hoping to get a response from the councilman on this. I've rented multiple properties in Kansas City, and I've been in some bad situations. And as a renter, I had no idea what my rights were or in what way I could hold the landlord accountable for my situation. And it would be really great to have some kind of, not like a whistleblower thing, but like a website where you can leave a formal complaint or a phone call, like you mentioned earlier in the show, as well as just a very plainly stated list of tenant rights that are accessible to all tenants.
Did you even know, Trevor,
this to go about getting that?
Trevor, did you even know this program was out there?
No, I didn't actually until I heard the show.
Okay. What about what Trevor's talking about, Councilman?
You'll have to repeat it for me. I had my volume turned down. I didn't know it, so I'd only heard.
He's talking about making a website available where people can make complaints quickly if they need to, and how tenants would know their rights very quickly.
I'd probably have to leave that to staff to come up with something like that.
Nasser?
Actually, currently, you can call our 311, the city's 311, and you can go to the health department website. We have a link there that will take you to enter a complaint to our website, and you can call also our office.
So call 311, and people can connect with your program.
Absolutely,
that way.
And we have a phone number direct. You can talk to a live person. A person will answer and will take your complaint.
Trevor, what do you think? I mean, should tenants be given a sheet of paper saying, here's the number when they rent a unit?
I mean, that sounds like a fantastic idea to me. I mean, I'm no civic expert, but just there seems to be a lack of awareness among tenants as to what they are entitled to legally, what their rights are, and what constitutes a violation of those rights. Like, for example, the first apartment I moved into in Kansas City had bed bugs when I moved in. I missed it when I first checked the apartment.
Okay.
And I had no idea if that was allowed, if I was responsible for fixing it when the landlord refused to fix it effectively. And I had to pay for getting rid of the bed bugs. I had no idea what I was entitled to or who I could go to complain. So it's just a matter of making sure that there is awareness among the residents. I think having a sheet of paper that's assigned to every lease, like a cigarette warning, like this gives you cancer, like, you know, now that you're signing a lease, here's your rights as a tenant. That sounds like a great idea to me.
Trevor, thank you. And well, given the fact there are so many complaints already, clearly a lot of tenants appear to know about this program as it is, Councilman.
Yeah. It shows at least to a certain degree that there is an awareness out there. Now, can we do a better job? Yeah, absolutely, we can.
How hard did landlords fight this program when you guys were attempting to get it through the council the first time?
They were pretty vociferous. In fact, after it was passed by the citizens in a ballot initiative, they continued to come back to us wanting us to repeal it, which at that point was absolutely not going to happen. But yeah, the landlords have a fairly active lobby, and they were working it pretty hard.
Yeah. Do you still get pushback from landlords?
To a certain extent. To a certain extent, there's still pushback from landlords.
Do they object to the idea that you guys can come in and inspect?
Yes. Actually, I mean, we started from day one when we submitted the proposal. We met with landlords before we presented that to committee and to council, and they were against the fact that they don't want another set of regulation.
You know, just in general, Councilman Fowler, do you think this program's working based on what you're seeing so far? Are you satisfied with where the thing's at?
Yes, I think in general terms I am. Are there more issues out there that could be looked at? Absolutely. I'm convinced that there are. But for where we are with it, being a year in operation so far, it shows that we are getting complaints. And I would point out that during that year before we expanded the program to include HUD housing, we were getting complaints from HUD housing that were more serious often than the complaints we were getting from market rate housing.
Yeah.
And so we couldn't do much then, but now we can. So,
you know, you get a sense there's a tenants' rights group in town known as KC Tenants that's working to protect vulnerable renters. You have this new inspection program. You get a sense, Councilman, that it's a new day in town when it comes to protecting renters. Am I seeing that correctly?
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
I think with the citizens passing this on an election, I think it shows generally that there is an awareness and a concern for the quality of the housing that we're renting out to people.
Okay, we're going to have to leave our conversation there again. Nasser, if people want to connect with this program, you're saying call what number again?
They can call 311 or call 816-513-6347.
Okay, we'll try and put that up on our website later on today. That was the voice of Nasser Johani, who works with the Rental Inspection Program in the Kansas City Health Department. We were also joined today by Dan Fowler, who represents the Northlands 2nd District on the City Council. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Steve.
Time for a short break. Even though it's Monday, we're going to talk about film and some good new independent films that are out with our film critics. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. My newsletter, Kraske Off Mic, gives you behind-the-scenes insights from me and the entire up-to-date team. Don't miss out. Go to kcur.org/Kraske and sign up for highlights from the show in your inbox each Monday. That's today. You can sign up right now. Go to kcur.org/Kraske. Tomorrow, the diaries of a young physician trained in St. Charles, Missouri, provide one of the best and earliest accounts of life along the Santa Fe Trail. Join us as we learn about caring for the frontiersmen of the 1800s. That's tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, big news on the independent film front in Kansas City. The much-beloved Tivoli, which closed in April after 36 years in Westport, will be reopening in October at the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art. It's a development that has cheered lovers of great films in the area. Our film critics are here to give us their reaction and run down the latest independent and foreign films now showing in town. Our film critics are Cindy Haynes. Cindy, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Steve Walker is here. Stephen.
I'm glad to be here.
And Bob Butler, whose reviews can be read at butlercinemascene.com.
Glad to be in here.
Robert, how are you?
You,
good to
great.
See you. So what do you make of this surprise announcement last week that Jerry Harrington at the Tivoli live on, this time at the Nelson Atkins. Cindy, what do you think of it?
Well, I'm absolutely delighted that Jerry Harrington has been brought back to the film scene, because I don't think there's any better curator that this town's ever seen than Jerry.
Pretty good track record as far as I was concerned. What do you make of it, Steve?
Well, I think it's a work in progress, and something remains to be seen. I mean, they're opening with a Buster Keaton film. Not exactly what the Tivoli was doing. They weren't really a revival house. I'm not poo-pooing this idea at all. Don't take me wrong.
It's for an open. You're going to have the symphony play a little bit, and it's going to be kind of a fundraising kind of thing.
For that, they are. And then Jerry's picked one of his very favorite films, which is from the 40s, I believe, a British film. And then we'll see how the calendar unfolds.
I mean, we're only talking four movies a week.
Right.
And
it's not like three screens.
No, and it's not like, you know, you can go in any time, day or night, and there's going to be a movie or two playing.
Right.
So you're going to have to plan ahead. The for the Nelson, a lot of museums around the country have had cinema, you know, things going on for years.
Right.
This is new to Kansas City. People are going to have to get used to it. But I think it's really going to help the Nelson, because you get a big discount if you become a friend of art, if you buy into the Nelson's membership, because you get free parking, which is $10 a pop.
Right.
And you get $10 tickets for only $7. So if you go to see 10 movies over the course of a year, a museum membership is worth it.
Yeah.
Well, Julian deserves a lot of credit, too. I mean, his energy and enthusiasm is making this happen.
That's Julian Zugasa-Goitia, who's the head of the Nelson Atkins. Big question, is there going to be popcorn and soda and Junior Mints, or where do we stand with that?
No, but they are saying that after each screening, they're going to reserve a series of tables in the Razil Court so that moviegoers can go nosh and talk about the movies, which is a nice idea.
So is it going to be four different movies each week, or one movie
yet
showing
to be
different
seen.
Times?
We yet to be this. Seen.
Yeah. Until the calendar comes out, which I'm very much looking forward to seeing, more than the first two they've mentioned, then we'll see. I mean, we'll see what it's going to look like.
I think they should offer Junior Mints, because they're so okay. good. You'll never waste any. You won't throw any on the floor because they're so good. You'll eat them all.
Raisinets don't squash.
Well, I love Raisinets.
Yeah, aren't they good?
I can go with that, too.
Yeah.
So we'll talk to Julian about Raisinets and Junior Mints.
So we're all, you know, crossed fingers, big hopes. We'll see.
Okay, we'll see what happens here. Let's go to our films here, and we'll begin with the new one that's getting some really good buzz, Linda Ronstadt, The Sound of My Voice. This is a fabulous documentary about the incredibly talented and influential singer Linda Ronstadt, Cindy.
Well, if I have to recommend one movie this
week, everybody's saying that right now.
It would be this Linda Ronstadt documentary. She was a master of so many different genres. And back in her heyday, she was it. And I think there's a whole generation out there that maybe doesn't know her or understand the contribution she's made. She grew up learning her songs in Spanish. Her dad was of Mexican-German descent, with the emphasis on Mexico. And the contributions that she's made there to Mexican music have been very, very significant. So I thoroughly enjoyed the documentary itself. But there's so many wonderful testimonials. I mean, do take a few Kleenexes and be prepared to be moved by this incredibly talented woman.
And what do you move by?
Her sincerity, her passion, her skills. There's just so much about her as a performer.
And the fact that she hasn't been able to sing for the last 7 or 8 years due to health issues.
Yeah, that's something else.
She had an arena-filling voice. I've seen her several times over my life at the Arrowhead, at the Hearns Multipurpose Center.
She was at Arrowhead once.
With the Eagles.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
And Jackson Browne, I believe. I can't remember the full lineup. But her voice is just amazing. You just think about a few bars of Blue Bayou, and she could just take it places that no one else could do. There was nobody like her.
This movie makes the case that she's the greatest female pop singer of the latter part of the 20th century.
Wow.
No, and that's not her hyperbole. I don't know. I don't think so.
We have a clip here, Cindy. What is it?
It's wonderful. Dolly Parton, Emmylou Harris talking about their friend Linda Ronstadt.
Emmy called me up. She said, Dolly Parton's at my house. You have to come over. I was living like 40 minutes away, and I got there in 20 minutes.
She came over, and there we were, the three of us, and we were there with our idol, Dolly.
And they had this big old house, almost like a bunch of hippies, just living up there, you know, different people, the musicians. They had different bedrooms. And it was just a free-for-all kind of house, a dream for musicians.
And somebody said, well, sing something.
Bury me beneath the willow, under the weeping willow tree, so he may know where I am sleeping, and perhaps he'll weep for me. So I started singing that, and then they started saying, sing that again. And I go, oh, bury me. And here come all these harmonies, and oh, it was just chilling, chilling, chilling. Beneath the
willow. Wow. Wow, yeah. That sounds great. Well, hearing her voice makes me think of the PBS series on country music that's running right now, which I think has been just terrific. I can't stop watching it.
I've got it saved. I haven't started. I've started the first one.
Oh, it's a whole bunch of stuff I didn't know about.
I got membership to the station just so I could stream it. So
there you go.
That's one of the reasons they're doing it.
In mind, Ronstadt will be one of the Kennedy Center honors this December, so
right.
You can imagine how great that concert will be.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to one that has a lot of people talking. Downton Abbey has a film out here, Steve Walker, the continuing saga of the wealthy British Crawley family.
Well, if you watched Downton Abbey, then you probably have seen it already. Yeah. I mean, it opened number one, made $31 million.
Wow.
I was a huge Downton Abbey fan.
Is it worth the wait?
Oh, yes. Sure. Oh, yeah. Even the first strains of that score, you're just like, oh, yes, it's back. And this story is how the king and queen in 1927 of England used to tour around and stay at people's estates. They didn't stay in, you know, an apartment mm-hmm. above a pub. But and so their staff comes in, all the royal butlers and maids and hand servants. And, oh, he's not a butler, though. He's corrected.
Yeah.
But they sort of usurp all those great characters that were the Crowleys and the Granthams' staff mm-hmm. downstairs. So there's a lot of clashes there. That's the most fun part of the film.
If you haven't seen the PBS series,
I can't
if
imagine.
You're new to this, can you walk in and enjoy this film?
I wouldn't know.
Yes. But I think they need a family tree. In every movie theater, because there are so many characters and you just don't understand their backstory. I think they did a wonderful job of trying to condense several of the plots. There's a new plot involving one of the characters who I think will be a regular, Imelda Staunton. But other than that, it's just a delight to see those characters again. The costumes by Anna Mary Scott Robbins are phenomenal. They're going to have an impact, I think, on fashion, you know, from now on. But anyway.
I enjoyed it a lot, and I think you will be too if you're a huge fan, because you'll know they've thrown some bait out there for this to go on.
No kidding.
Well, you know, I'm kind of struck. A lot of times when they try to adapt a TV show, a movie to... It falls apart. I was not a fan of the Sex and the City movies. They tried Entourage last year, and that was crashed and burned. But those weren't beloved in quite the same way as this one. This one has got... It's like an actor's acting, ensemble. Everybody in it is terrific.
It picks up in 1927, 1 year after the television series ended in 1926. So there's that continuity there. We're not leaping ahead, you know, another generation. And it's been 3 years since we've seen the final episode. There were six PBS seasons from 2011 to 2016. Just so
it's
you
been
can...
3 years already since this.
Yes,
that time goes by when you're having fun. What's the clip we're going to?
Well,
hear
in
here?
The clip, not surprisingly, they're sitting at dinner and speaking about the fact that the monarchy is coming to visit
from Downton Abbey.
Isn't that what the monarchy's for? To brighten the lives of the nation with stateliness and glamour. To quote Tennyson. Kind hearts are more than coronets, and simple faith than Norman blood.
Will you have enough cliches to get you through the visit?
If not, I'll come to you.
Okay.
That unmistakable
out there. There
Maggie
you go.
Smith wit.
Maggie Smith, there she goes again. Okay, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking with our film critics, even though it's Monday, about film. Why are we doing this today on a Monday?
You're going out of town.
We're going out of town. We're going to Washington later this week.
Right, yeah. Right.
Broadcast from NPR. So we're doing it today. That's why we're doing it today. Okay, let's move on here and talk about a film that my wife wants to see. Brittany Runs a Marathon, Steve Walker.
Well, this movie is interesting.
It's about a young woman training for the New York City Marathon in an effort to make some changes in her life.
Right. She's a young millennial living in New York. She's overweight, not the most successful dating life, has got some good friends, but... So on the surface, you think it's going to be this inspirational, lose weight, run the marathon kind of story wrapped up in pretty bows and ribbons. But it goes to some very dark places. And I will say that it's that theme is about, and Bob, you back me up here.
Yes, sir.
People change their physical appearance, whether it's surgery or weight loss or whatever, and they think all of their other past foibles and faults will be corrected. And this shows that that is not true. If you have unpacked baggage, the baggage will be there when you've changed your appearance.
That said, it is an inspirational movie. When it ends, I was darn near close to tears.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe the darkness pays off dramatically speaking in the end.
Did you like this film, Bob?
I did.
What grade did you give it on butlercinemascene.com?
I gave it a 3-star, I'm pretty sure.
Jillian Bell is her name. Watch for her. It's a star-making performance from her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's the clip we have here, Steve?
She's starting her campaign, which first amounts to her walking down the front stairs of her apartment building, and then she's done. But she goes on. She goes to visit a gym, and this is her conversation with somebody who works there.
This is from Brittany Runs a Marathon.
We have a bunch of membership options to fit all your fitness needs with rates as low as $129 a month.
I'm sorry, I thought you said as low and then the $129 for a month.
Yeah, that's a starting rate, $129 a month, and for that you get access to everything in the gym except half of it.
So every person we've walked by has $129 to just give to you? Is there a sliding scale for people in debt up to their Okay. You do know that people can go outside, though, and just be outside and, like, do things.
Absolutely.
And that's the same fitness experience.
You know, you pay for our facilities.
Okay.
That's funny.
It's good.
You're surprised that it's written and directed by a male. I was.
Very insightful.
It's a profound movie. There's two scenes in it. If your wife goes, I'd love to hear what she thinks.
So I should take my wife to see this film.
Yes. There's two scenes that are just punch you in the gut. Related to what I said earlier about thinking all your life's going to be wonderful.
Okay, that film, Brittany Runs a Marathon, 2 thumbs up from our critics here. Let's move on here to Official Secrets. This is a British whistleblower leaks information to the press about an illegal spy operation designed to push the UN Security Council into sanctioning the 2003 invasion of Iraq. It's based on a true story, Bob.
It absolutely is. It's sort of in the style of The Post and Spotlight, docudramas about a conspiracy or something that is being brought to light. Keira Knightley plays our heroine. Her name is Catherine Gunn, and she was part of the British spy service. Basically, it wasn't very glamorous. She sat at a desk and translated Chinese intercepted phone calls. But one day she came to work, and there was an email. She and all of her friends got it. This is in shortly after 9/11. And it's from the CIA to the British Secret Service saying, help us get dirt on these characters from different countries that might oppose in the UN Security Council our invasion of Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, they're asking the entire British service to blackmail these representatives of various countries. Catherine said, not a good idea. She copied it. She took it and gave it to an anti-war friend. It ended up going into the hands of reporters. And it's directed by, what's his name? Gavin Hood.
Mm-hmm.
Gavin Hood. And in a way, it's like three different stories. First, there's her story, living in fear that she's going to be found out. Then there's the efforts of the reporters, and that's very much in the spotlight category. And then finally, when they catch up with her, the authorities, it becomes sort of a legal drama. Now, thing is packed with British faces that you recognize: Ralph Fiennes and Reese Ifans, Matt Smith, Matthew Good. I think that the film itself is okay. I think the important thing is that the story's out there, that we understand just how ugly it was.
True story?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. This includes Colin Powell's speech to the UN where he made up the WMDs.
Right.
And that's basically what they're saying. Let's
this a complicated movie?
Yeah, it's pretty dense, but Keira Knightley carries it for sure.
Could I follow it?
A
person like me can keep track. I'm just asking because
like
I want to relax on a Friday night.
An eighth grader could follow it, Steve. Okay, I think you're good.
And I'm just asking.
In a sense, the good guys win, although in a sense, we all lost. But
well, it's based on a book called The Spy Who Tried to Stop a War, which kind of sums it up, too.
Cindy?
I think the first half didn't have momentum, and I was a little frustrated, and I thought, oh, this is going to be pretty boring. But if you stick it out, the second half of the film is really worth your time.
So you got to hang in there for you're saying. Okay. Bob, we have a clip here from Official Secrets.
She's being confronted by her accusers.
Okay.
What were you employed to do?
I can't be specific.
General, then.
I translated signals intelligence and I reported anything I thought might be of interest to my clients.
Your clients?
The Foreign Office, the Ministry of Defense.
So, you work for the British government?
No, not really.
No?
Governments change. I work for the British people. I gather intelligence so that the government can protect the British people. I do not gather intelligence so that the government can lie to the British people.
How is Keira Knightley in this
role? Like her. I've always liked her.
This is one of her better performances, mm-hmm.
So
I do believe.
Thumbs up for Official Secrets around the table here?
Yes.
Sounds like it. Okay, so people feel pretty positive. Okay, today is the 23rd of September. On the 27th of September, on Friday, a few other films are going to be opening up of note here. One film is titled Judy. It's for Judy Garland. Renee Zellweger plays the role. What do we know about this, Bob?
We know that this has Oscar bait dripping off of it.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
It's a fantastic perf, and you're gonna love it.
Yeah, and you learn something about Judy Garland.
All know she had a very rough time latter part of her life, and so it's a case of a performance rising above really downbeat material.
And Renee Zellweger, what would you say about her performance here?
You don't see Renee Zellweger in sight. It's all Judy.
It's that good.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
It's centered on her performances in London in 1968, which was a year before her death.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is a film of note that we should be looking forward to
seeing. I haven't seen it.
That film is titled simply Judy. Okay, another film here. Before you know it, it's two sisters discover the mother they thought was dead. She's starring in a soap opera. Help me here. That sounds pretty promising.
Well, it's this very convoluted film, but I just want to mention it. It opens Friday at Barry Woods in Studio 28. The director, never heard of her, Hannah Pearl Utt, she's an actress as well, co-written with another actor I'd never heard of, Jen Tulloch. They star as sisters. To their dad is Mandy Patinkin, and this family is very bohemian. They live above a theater off Broadway down in the village. And it's about their life and trying to come to terms with the fact that their dad has told them their whole life their mom died. And they subsequently things happen and they realize, oh, no, she didn't. And they track her down. It's a charming, charming film from two very talented young women who I thankfully now have on my radar.
And the mom has been starring in a soap opera.
Right. Well, it's Judith Light who's playing her, who was, you know, made her career doing soap opera. So she's fun.
So big thumbs up
for this film.
Mm-hmm. The shooting location is a real life landmark, the 13th Street Rep.
Oh, yeah. No, I've been there. Yeah. It's a tiny hole in the wall theater. It's a good movie. Watch for it.
That film, again, titled Before You Know It. Okay, another film here, The Sound of Silence. This is a house tuner who calibrates the sound in people's homes in order to adjust their moods, winds up with a client with a problem he simply can't solve.
This is sort of an existential movie in a weird way. I like the beginning. It goes off the rails in the end, but it's got a performance by Peter Sarsgaard that is definitely worth catching. Do you remember The Conversation, the Coppola movie starring Gene Hackman about the sound technician who can eavesdrop on any conversation?
Very highly.
This feels a lot like that. We've got this guy who let's face it, he's a nutcase, although you're not aware of that.
Yeah.
He goes to people's houses and they say, I've been sleepless, my head hurts. He analyzes the sounds in their house and he'll say, get a new toaster. They get a new toaster and they're better. He wanders around the tuning forks, you know, dinging them and like picking up resonances. He wanders through New York City.
Do people really do this?
I do not know.
I don't know.
I do not know. But given the fact that noise pollution can affect people's health, who knows? But he gets a new client, Rashida Jones, who's best known for comedy, but here she plays drama well. And it's not really a love story, although you kind of want it to be. And at that point, I find it sort of wanders off into areas and they're not quite sure what they're doing. It's a debut film from Michael Tiberski. And for a first-timer, it's got a great atmosphere. I just wish it paid off more.
I have notes down when I saw it, urban equilibrium, and that's sort of what it's about. He thinks he's going to go in and fix people's balance.
Right.
Through the fact that their radiator is a B flat. That's your problem.
Yeah, your radiator is a B flat, so he's an A.
If he was 8 years old, he'd have a diagnosis of being on the spectrum.
Yeah.
Very definitely. Also, there's a company that's interested in obtaining the research that he's been doing, and he wants to be accepted as
real scientist.
Real scientist, and not just someone selling what he knows.
Just quickly, one last film, Aquarella, if I'm saying that right, a documentary about water and ice are shown in environments around the world.
Right. It is. I enjoyed it immensely. There's no dialogue except a little bit at the beginning of the film, but it's just like every raging sea, every calving glacier, every hurricane, and it's just about water, and you realize how fragile the planet is.
Well, let's sum up here. If you had to pick three films that we post each week about the best films that are showing in town, Bob, which ones would you point to?
Well, Linda Ronstadt. I'm going to say Peanut Butter Conspiracy, which we did last time out.
It's Peanut Butter Falcon, I think.
Peanut Butter Falcon,
mean.
You're right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And coming up this Friday, Love Antosha, which take your Kleenex, guys.
Okay, Stephen.
Brittany Runs a Marathon, which surprised me, but I like it a lot. Official Secrets and Linda Ronstadt.
Okay.
Ronstadt, Downton, and Peanut Butter Falcon.
Okay. That's the voices of Cindy Haynes, Steve Walker, Bob Butler. Thank you all for a good update on the best films showing in town, including coming up at the Tivoli Theaters at the Nelson Atkins. Tomorrow, A Young Physician's Diaries provides a rich account of travel along the Santa Fe Trail back in the 1800s. Join us as we learn about life and medicine on the frontier. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Elizabeth Ruiz, and Jamie Hobbs. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.